All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and part of the Christians for Liberty Network. This week and every week on Biblical Anarchy, we seek to live counterculture to the empire of man and to instead seek the kingdom of God by unpacking what the Bible teaches about government, authority, and human relationships. I'm your host, Jacob Winograd. For this special edition of the episode, this is very impromptu. I have my friend Kyle Matovic on from, you do like four different podcasts now, so I don't even know how to properly, introduce which one's your primary one anymore. I think your primary one is still In Liberty and Health. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be correct.
Right. And then you do a bunch of other ones as well. Why don't you, we're here to have a very particular conversation, which is going to be very little to do with what you actually talk about on your show. Why don't you go ahead and just, this is your first time on my show. I've been on your short show a few times, but go ahead and just kind of introduce yourself for the audience before we get into things here.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Jacob. I know we try to make this work out once before, but life kind of happens. You and I both kind of live very, very busy lives, but I think you got a little bit busier than I do in some respects. But yeah, my name is Kyle Matovic. Much like you, I'm a automotive technician, and I host the In Liberty and Health podcast, which I do usually 2 to 3 times a week. I do 5 till midnight with a couple of our mutual friends, Luke and Typo for Biting the Bullet, Sam Urban, and our mutual friend Adam Nutter. That's every Monday night. And then I occasionally do Cognitive Vigilance now that my band practice is starting to move around with my band, A Common Crown. I don't quite get to do that as much on Thursday evenings, but you did that show and that was a lot of fun. Then, as I just mentioned, I play guitar in a band called A Common Crown. So, yeah, I wear quite a few hats, but, I am a happy and healthy husband who just likes to talk about libertarian stuff, music, and lift and heavy things.
Yeah, no, we wear a lot of common hats, although you use the word friend very loosely there when you talk about Adam Nutter, the most failed comedian right behind Dave Smith. So, if Adam listens to this, I love Adam. I'll have to have him back on the show sometime too. I haven't had him on my new show with LCI, but he can be my charity case, so to speak. So
throwing a bone to your fellow Catholic friends.
So, you and I are both libertarians and, we kind of swim in the same circles and stuff. And I know you've been, not as much as I've been, but to some extent following some of the things that have been going on with Candace Owens and the Daily Wire and her being, either fired or having a mutual parting of ways. I'm not really sure. Exactly how that happened yet. And then, this was funny because all off the heels of like Dave Smith was on her show and she had conversations with Tucker Carlson, and she's been really kind of, trending more based on things like foreign policy and the war in Israel and things like that. Still, kind of classic conservative takes on other areas, but, kind of seemed like, she was trending our way and it was sort of cool that she was on the Wire and we had guys like Dave going on her show. And then, of course, her last episode, she talks about how she won't be silenced, and there's like a mafia of people that basically will try to take you out if you try to criticize them. And then, just completely coincidentally, she loses her job right after she says that on an episode. Right. And, this gets into topics that people are uncomfortable with and it makes them squirmish because, anytime we start talking about things related to the Jewish people, people kind of put their, Nazi radar on because they think that if you have any negative thing to say about Jewish people at all, even if you are Jewish, as I am, as Dave Smith is, as Norman Finkelstein is, there are so many self-described self-hating Jews that even being Jewish doesn't earn us any favors. It's just like, if you have anything critical to say about any Jewish people or about the nation of Israel or their foreign policy or their treatment of the Palestinians or whatever, or if you call out you can call out how maybe there's identity politics on the right and left where they'll protect certain groups of people. But if you say that there are Jews who do that, you must be a Nazi for trying to spread some kind of weird, blood libel or some kind of weird, anti-Semitic trope or whatnot. you know, would you have anything to add to that? Is there any sort of, before we, and I'm going to be playing a clip here for us in a minute, but I'm just kind of setting the stage of what we're talking about here for the general audience, because some people of my show, you know, who don't pay as much attention to politics might just be like, why are we talking about this? And I think it's important because it plays a lot into, you know, why certain foreign policy positions are hard to criticize, because they tie into this.
Right. Yeah. Well, a lot of what you said is spot on there. And one thing that I would like to add is that when we start talking about groups as a whole, people start to get uncomfortable because they can't seem to abstract between individuals of a group and then groups as a whole. So, you know, obviously a lot of people kind of the left persuasion get very uncomfortable when people start talking about Black people as a group. And for many, many years now, particularly recently, I think you and I both are probably in the same mental space where we saw the, you know, overrepresentation of the left wing in America being concerned about identity politics and, you know, minority groups being kind of, you know, discriminated against. And there's some truth in that, but now we're starting to see this huge identity politics push on the right half of America because of a certain group of people. And anytime you talk about this certain group of people who just so happen to be Jewish, then people tend to get uncomfortable. And understandably so, because there is historical precedent for this group being targeted by, you know, legitimately bad people at one point or another. And people could dispute those claims on their merits or whatever, what have you. But regardless, people do, like you said, kind of look at you a little weird when you start talking about, you know, Jewish people as a whole. Now, once again, people just have a hard time deciding whether or not, you know, when you talk about groups of people, if you're speaking about individuals or you're speaking about the group as a whole. I think what we're talking about here is about the state of Israel, but not the Jewish people as a whole. We're talking about a government that, in our perception, does very, very bad things, but that a lot of people seem to associate with biblical themes, and that, you know, kind of throws up a whole nother, you know, emotional and language barrier that you kind of have to break down before you can have like a serious conversation about, you know, the material state of Israel and how it operates in our world.
Yeah, sorry, I had my mouse was on the wrong screen. Took a while to get back to the mute button there. So the it's frustrating because, you know, you kind of referenced, you know, the reason why people are a bit touchy about you know, talking about the Jewish people in a collective sense is because, yeah, like obviously the Holocaust happened, and that's a major historical event that, you know, people like you and I sort of grew up in a, you know, generation that's sort of like immediately after the generation that sort of dealt with the consequences of that. And so, you know, for good reason, people have taught the Holocaust, and it was like, this is like one of the greatest evils that ever happened, and we should learn from that, try not to repeat the same mistakes. And, you know, I remember going to the Holocaust Museum as a kid, and finding, like, you know, relatives' last names, you know, and stuff on the list of reported victims. I remember watching Schindler's List. I mean, that's still one of the movies that cuts deep to me. You know, like, one of the things that motivates me as a libertarian is wanting to save lives. You know, like, for so, like, as a wearing my Christian and libertarian hat, like, I'm very motivated to, like, speak out against injustice, to speak out against the innocent being harmed. And I remember that, you know, one of that last scenes in Schindler's List where, you know, Oscar Schindler is, like, you know, inconsolable crying because he's like, if I would have sold this watch, if I would have just sold this car, I could have saved, you know, 10 more lives or 5 more lives or just one more life. And just, you know, going on about just how precious even one life is, and how, mm-hmm. you know, to, you know, how he wish he would have just saved one more. And so then, you know, for me, I'm like, okay, so now I'm applying this lens of, like, we should be against, you know, slaughters of group, you know, groups of innocent people like this. But there are certain, you know, instances where if you try to say that in the public square right now, you'll get pushback. If you try to suggest that, you know, maybe we shouldn't be, you know, sending just indiscriminate amounts of money and weapons to Ukraine in this proxy war against Russia, which has just turned into a meat grinder for innocent civilians and people conscripted into military on both sides, that means that you're just pro-Putin and making pro-Putin talking points and, right. and things like that. And then the same thing happens with Israel, that if you're saying, listen, I, you know, October 7th was horrible, and what Hamas did, you know, as far as the killing of innocent Israeli lives is horrible, and you know, defense is warranted. The Israeli people have a right to self-defense, but, you know, I don't know, like, you know, 5,000, 10,000, now 20,000, some, you know, reported civilian deaths in Gaza. It's like, you know, are we not allowed to be equally upset by that? And so this was the kind of thing Candace Owens was talking about. She's basically saying, like, listen, like everything I just said, Hamas is evil. Israel has a right to defend itself. But I don't know, like, can I just be also equally sad and disturbed by the loss of life on the other side and maybe be questioning if the response is proportional and maybe, you know, maybe not being the most well thought out? You know, are there other ways we can try to resolve this conflict? Are there historical, you know, ways in which we can analyze the relationship between the Palestinians and the Israeli state and say, like, maybe this was kind of blowback on part of the policies there by the state of Israel and the support that America gives them towards that end. So, you know, and so it's really cool to see Candace be talking about this and having people like Dave Smith and Norman Finkelstein on to kind of like, you know, put this message out to a bunch of people. I mean, like, as big as some of our heavy hitters are, like Ron Paul and Dave Smith and all them, they got big audiences, but Candace is on, you know, up until 2 days ago, was on like the biggest conservative alt media, you know, not like Fox News or anything, but other than that, like, you know, the Daily Wire is like the biggest thing in conservative media right now, is
right.
Whereas like Steven Crowder likes to call it the big con, right? So and so it was cool. Like, you know, she's got millions of followers, millions of people listening to her podcast. And so she was able to be, you know, interviewing people and bringing awareness to this kind of stuff. And now she's been thrown out with basically what amounts to accusations of anti-Semitism, which she tried to address. She even had her critics on her show to address it. And that wasn't good enough for people. So I haven't heard anything yet from Ben Shapiro. There's only like one tweet from Jeremy Waring, who's like the head of the Daily Wire in terms of this, but Klavan seems like the first person from the Daily Wire to actually address the departure of Candace Owens and to give his take on it. And I thought it would be interesting to have you and I react to this. I've watched all this, but you haven't, so it'll be interesting to get both of our responses. And I want to try to, the purpose of this for those listening is I want to demonstrate an inconsistency in the argumentation, because Andrew Klavan starts out making points that I would largely agree with, and then you'll get to a point where suddenly he is using a bunch of special pleading and logical fallacies, and Kyle and I are going to try to, you know, live react to this and point this out for you listening and see if you guys can follow what we're saying. So that sound good? Anything you want to say before we start playing that?
No, let's go ahead and get into it.
All right. So I have it stopped right at the end of Daily Wire does all their ad placements. So it's like right at the end of one of those ad placements. So they're getting some free promotion on my show here. Oh,
you Christian Zionist shill.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Beam's best-selling dream powder. Take advantage of 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/Klavan and use code Klavan at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Klavan with my promo code Klavan for up to 40% off your order. Now you can drift into sleep thinking, but how do you spell Klavan? It's K-L-A-V-A-N.
K-L-A-V-A-N, there are no easy things.
Thinking I'm going to start cutting carbs. I need to drop my belly fat.
I don't pay for YouTube, audience. Sorry.
I'm somebody who says exactly what I mean. I have talked about crime, the black community, and fatherlessness, and the fact that I do not believe that I believe the great society has more to do with black crime than anything that ever had to do with slavery. It's not anti-Semitic to attack George Soros. It's not anti-Semitic to disagree with Ben. It's not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel or to feel that America should not be supporting Israel or even to believe that the Palestinians have a case to make about the way they've been treated.
All right, so we're playing at 1.5 speed here just for the sake of time, because Andrew Klavan speaks at the speed of a snail, but he just threw a bunch of things out there. The first thing he said was that we can, you know, like, listen, he'll talk about crime statistics and point out that, like, listen, the black population in America is responsible for a disproportionate amount of the crime compared to their representation within the entire population. So I know, and these are actually statistics that, like, if you go to like the Southern Poverty Law Center or, I don't know, I'm forgetting all the other, you know, anti-hate watch groups that exist, but these statistics are like numbers that they say are like dog whistles, essentially. So like 13 and 50 and 13 and 90 are like, you know, numbers that are associated. They say like, oh, if you see people citing this, they're white supremacists, they're KKK members, they're, you know, all sorts of stuff, even though these are just, you know, raw statistics. Like it's no one can actually make a claim. Now, people will try to explain the statistic, but no one's actually like arguing against the raw data, which is that roughly, yeah, like 13% of the population, which is about what the Black population is, commits over, I think it's over 50% of the crime. And then it's like, I forget the 1391 angle too, but it's like, and he's saying, listen, it's not racist to point out these general trends. Now, it's racist if you go on to say, and they do this because they're born this way genetically.
Right.
Like,
well, this is people starting to use data to beat somebody over the head with, right? Where like a lot in our kind of, you know, in the media sphere today, you can't just give people information, right? Like when I tell people nutrition information, like I tell you, oh, well, seed oils actually aren't inherently bad for you. People take that and say, oh, well, you're telling me to eat, you know, drink a whole jug of canola oil. No, I'm not telling you that. I'm just telling you, hey, when you look in the human data on this stuff, it's actually not that bad for you. Well, this is kind of like when you talk about crime statistics, you're not saying every single Black person in the world is going to rob you and have, heaven forbid, do something to your kids or something like that. You're just speaking about the generalities of a group and what has been recorded. The same way as we might talk about the way that, you know, men tend to prefer younger women. Once again, that's just what men say when they're polled. What that means from there, I don't know. That's just what they say when they're polled. You know, we can't go into every single person's mind and figure out what, you know, what they're thinking when they do these acts or when they answer these questions to give you the aggregate raw data. It's just a tool, and that's all it is. You could use it, you know, to heat your home, or you could use it to burn it down. It's really up to you how you interpret these things and apply them to your life.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's, you know, data is data, and then there is the interpretation and the application of data, and even the contextualization of data, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there might be, you know, like, for sake of argument, there might be arguments that, boy, this is the same thing for, like, the whole, like, race and IQ stuff that people don't like to talk about, and it's like, right. Listen, there are arguments. I'm not saying that they're 100% the correct arguments, but that they're plausible arguments for why, like, differences in the crime outcome, differences in IQ outcomes could be completely explained away by environmental factors and have nothing to do with genetics, nothing to do with biology, nothing to do, you know, with that. And there's other explanations, you know, environment would include things like culture and education and upraising and the, you know, social, political, and financial, you know, things that you're raised in. You know, there's things like single motherhood that run rampant through, you know, the Black community, especially in urban areas. So, you know, these are things that contextualize the data, but what doesn't change is the data. And just pointing out that, like, hey, there's a problem here. Let's try to understand this problem so we can come up with solutions. There's nothing inherently racist about that. And even Klavan is saying, yeah, we can talk about this, and this doesn't mean you're racist like the left would claim that you are. So, and then he goes on to say that, you know, then he kind of shifts. He's like, listen, we can criticize Jewish people and say they're wrong. Well, you can criticize Ben. He says you can criticize even Israel, and you can have concerns about Gaza. And he's like, so none of this makes you anti-Semitic, which is right there, like 99.9% of everything that Candace has ever said on the subject,
right,
is basically what Klavan just said doesn't make you anti-Semitic. She's not even gone directly after Ben, other than responding to times Ben's gone after her. But she's just pointed out, like, hey, there's a disproportionate amount of deaths on the other side of the wall between Israel and Gaza. And the you know, looking into the history of it, both recently and tracing back to 1948 and before, we're not sure that the state of Israel has always been in the pursuit of peace, and even pointing out that there's, you know, there are groups within, you know, the broader, this gets messy, right? Like, it's hard to come up with the right descriptive words, but like, there's the state of Israel, there is the entirety of the Jewish population in Israel and in the world, then there are like Zionist groups and like Zionist lobby groups that exist, and influential, you know, special interest groups, influential people. What's the word I'm looking for here? I can't think of the right word. Philanthropists and things like that. People that, you know, are Jewish and have a particular like Zionist, you know, pro-Israel agenda. And they're lobbying for certain things in the state of Israel. And then they're also lobbying for certain things here in America, right, to the United States government. Mm-hmm. And then there's also people who bear their influence out in media and in journalism and in Hollywood. And this is not to say that there aren't other groups that do this. It's not like Jews aren't the only group in history to have people advocate for the interests of their group in different ways, right? Like this happens all the time. I mean, Candace Owens kind of made her rise to fame by calling this out as it exists in the Black movement, by criticizing Black Lives Matter as basically being a form of, you know, Black identity politics that she found was harmful and toxic. Right. And so it's like, okay, well, if we can criticize that within the Black community, wouldn't it stand to bear that there might be elements within, you know, the broad sphere of Zionist or Jewish identity politics or what have you, that might also be trying to collectively wield influence and power in ways that we might not agree with. So I don't know. That's kind of everything Klavan seems to be saying, is that like that seems to be okay to criticize. That seems to be all Candace has said, as far as I know. Anything you want to add to that, or?
No. I think you're spot on there, and kind of like we covered a little bit earlier on. It's just that when you start talking about groups as a whole, people get uncomfortable because they think, like I said, they can't abstract that you're speaking about, you know, a group as a whole rather than just specific right. individuals. When you talk about, you know, maybe a specific Jewish people as a whole, people think, oh, well, you're talking about my neighbor, someone that's Jewish, or when you talk about Black people's whole, well, you're talking about my one Black friend who I grew up with who isn't like that at all. No, it's just noticing patterns. And, you know, I think it's fair to point out too that like all people are going to have an in-group preference. Like when I see another white person who looks and talks like me, who's a mechanic, I tend to think, oh, that person's like me. And I would advocate for that person because they look like me and I'm familiar with them because we have a shared identity. I'm sure Jewish people, Black people, and Asian people all feel probably the same way when they look at other people who are a lot similar to them. It's just a natural thing of being human that you have an in-group preference.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be race. It can be religion. It can be culture. It can be all sorts of things where people are going to have
trade
preference. Yeah, trade. Yeah, exactly. Like you brought up. Yeah. So, and then there's going to be maybe different groups within those subgroups, right? Like as much as I'm saying we should be able to criticize maybe like the ultra pro-Zionist groups within the broader Jewish collective, there are also groups of Jews who are critical of Israel, who are critical of Zionism, but they never seem to get their day in court. You know what I mean? as much as we'll try to point out, like I remember there was a large group of Jewish people protesting immediately after October 7th, immediately protesting in the state of Israel, what they knew was coming, and you know, continuing to protest against what they label as the occupation of the Gaza Strip. They're pushed off the streets, and you know, they're victims of their own government's attempts to censor them. And it's not like these were a group of just Muslims. This was a group of predominantly Jewish people. And you got people, again, like for someone to point out someone with the last name Finkelstein, like Norman Finkelstein, and be like, oh, he's obviously just a Jew hater. Like this guy had, his parents were in the concentration camps during the Holocaust. So it's like, he's just doing what I said at the beginning. He's kind of like, hey, I think killing innocent people in you know, these massive murder campaigns is wrong. Maybe we should criticize that for everyone, not just when it happens to Jewish people. All right, let's get back to Klavan here. And I might slow this down, I think, to 1.25 just to make it a little bit easier.
I have even spoken about the fact that religions are thought processes that feed into modern thought processes. And I've spoken about the fact that secular Jews specifically are more drawn to materialist philosophy because Christians have treated them so badly over the years, they can't turn from there, as I did, turn from.
So just real quick, Klavan's collectivizing some Jews here. He just said secular Jews and says they're more drawn to like materialism and whatnot because of Christian. Like, I'm not even going to say I agree with that or not. Like, I'm not really here to talk about that, but just like he just collectivized a particular part within the Jewish people. So, I mean, is he anti-Semitic now? Like, I'm just anyway, let's keep going
from their Judaism to Christianity. So there's a lot of things that you can say that people accuse you that are true that people call racism. But you guys are smart people, right? And you know that people can use the truth to mask wickedness. You know this, right? The devil does it in the Bible, right? The devil comes up to Jesus, tempt Jesus, and he quotes scripture. He speaks the truth to mask evil, right? So if I'm the kind of brave conservative, which I am, who will sit and talk about high crime in black neighborhoods or criticize Soros, you know, without caring whether I'm called anti-Semitic or anything like that, and you're the kind of person who hates people because of the color of their skin or judges people according to the color of the skin, it's easy for you to blend in with me, right? We're sitting around talking about high crime in black neighborhoods, and you're sitting there going, yeah, the crime in black neighborhood. But I'm not on your side. I am not on your side at all. I believe that God made us in his image, every single one of us. That is written down. That is scriptural truth. That is right there in the Bible. He made men and women in his image. It doesn't say he made white men. It doesn't say he made black men. It doesn't say anything. It just says men and women are made in God's image. I believe that 100%. I've said this before. I don't know why the left is against racism. Obviously, they're not. They hate white people. So, you know, whatever. They're just against, you know, not having power. That's all they're against. I'm against racism. I believe it's a sin. I believe it's a sin. And
just need to pause to say stunning and brave. We'll continue.
And God didn't ask me how to make the world. I assume he doesn't want my, you know, opinion about it. And this is the world we're in, and people have different colors. They act in different ways. People of different races do have different cultures, come from different places. Maybe there's genetic components to it. I don't know. I just know. I don't know. That's not in the Bible. And I don't think we have enough science on it. But I just know they're all made in the image of God, and that's the end of the story. As far as I'm concerned, you come to me. I'm looking at.
So I just want to point out here, just I know, Kyle, you're not, you know, coming from the primarily Christian perspective like I am, but just, yeah, I think all men and women are created in the image of God. And I think that means that we have the same inherent value and the same inherent rights. Mm-hmm. And that, but even he's admitting here, but that doesn't mean that they're all the same, right? Like different groups can have different characteristics just based upon like, that they're different, right? Like it doesn't make sense to me to be like these people, you know, spent thousands of years or more in different places of the world in different cultural settings, being shaped by different religions and different environments and languages and things like that. And it's like, well, and he's even saying, yeah, like they're going to be different and shaped by these different things. And some of it, he even goes as far as to say some of it might be genetic, right? And it's a whole nature nurture thing. And that gets, again, people get maybe like rightfully a little bit sensitive or suspicious if you start bringing that up within the context of people's ethnicity or race. But ultimately what matters is like those differences, you know, honestly, I think tend to average out. Like some groups might be better at one thing and worse than another. And then, you know, compared to another group, it's like, okay, well, they're worse than that group at that thing, but they're better at this thing, right? And it's just, you know, whatever, like, you know, intelligence, skill sets, the ability to succeed in the world gets borne out in different ways. And we know this, like people are different, but at the end of the day, what matters from a Christian perspective to me, I agree with him. We can acknowledge these differences while also saying that, okay, well, everyone has the same inherent value and rights. And, you know, we don't decide if people are worthy of having their rights protected or, you know, worthy of having violence initiated against them mm-hmm. based on any of these differences. And I don't, you know, I know you would agree with that. And I haven't heard Candace Owens or anyone on our side of the, you know, criticizing the state of Israel say anything different. If anything, I feel like what we're saying is, yeah. And that includes Palestinians, right?
Well, yeah, it's funny because it almost seems like they want to make that exception without having to explicitly say that, yeah, Palestinians don't have the same rights as everybody else. And I would kind of mark myself down as Christian curious, if you will. I've been agnostic my entire life, and hopefully your audience does come over to my channel and check out some of my more recent conversations that I've had with people surrounding religion, with Tommy Sammons, Jim Bob, and Jay Dyer, and various other people. It's been a very, very interesting experience, and I'm sure that you and I will have more conversations about this in the future. It's been a topic that's interested me a lot because, definitely as I've gotten older, I've seen the utility in religion. And I think this is where the cultural right, gets a lot of things correct. I think sometimes the sanctimoniousness that comes from some religious people can be very, very off-putting, particularly if they were atheists or agnostic in their earlier years and then kind of came out strongly against that and the behaviors that they once did. I think that can kind of leave a bad taste in some people's mouths. But no, I consider religion and religious identity to be something very, very good because kind of like I was talking about earlier, it's another group identity that I think brings people together and gives people a shared purpose. And only that, much like your project that you have here with the Libertarian Christian Institute, I think this kind of gives people a good moral foundation that leads them to live a better life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that it you know, often I think, you know, like conservatives don't have, how do I want to phrase this? They aren't lacking valuable insights when it comes to things like culture and whatnot. And I like the way, I love the way Dave Smith puts it. He said this on Candace Owens' show. He's like, conservatives need to learn a libertarian lesson. And then he also said, and libertarians need to learn a conservative lesson, right? And it's like, and I think not only is that true, but like, I remember like back when I was first kind of getting into, so I came from the left, started listening to more right of center voices, and I listened to Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro would make the same argument too back when he was kind of LARPing as a libertarian. He'd be like, oh, I think libertarians are right on everything except culture. Yeah. And I think conservatives are right there, and conservatives need to, you know, so he used to kind of say the same thing, you know, and his, you know, his collectivism sort of led him down a different path, let's say. But yeah, it's like, you know, if you divorce, you know, reason from and including libertarian legal theory from a certain set of presuppositional values, you end up going in weird directions, kind of like the people you've seen me debating and having conversations with on Twitter, like Zulu and Ace in that crowd, where they're like, well, libertarianism means that pedophiles can be in public schools around children and as long as they're not actively violating rights. And you're like, okay, well, you've clearly lost the plot because you have placed abstract theory above virtue. And I'm like, right. I feel like you need the, you know, that's why I said a few weeks ago, like libertarianism needs virtue. And then people, you know, overreacted and took that out of context and as if I was making like a Christian nationalist argument or saying libertarianism was wrong. I'm like, no, libertarianism is good and true. It's just not enough. You need something beyond libertarianism to, you know, this is where, like, even though I didn't go the full, like, post-libertarian route, like Matt Erickson and others did, I've always appreciated them because I thought their fundamental criticism was correct. Like, yeah, like, you need something beyond libertarianism. I still think you need libertarianism, but it in and of itself is not enough. We need something beyond that.
Well, so. Yeah, a political philosophy can't tell you how to live a good life. And really, I don't think libertarianism is a life philosophy. I think it's more of just a political philosophy. And then your life values should be more that of religious values. And I say that as an agnostic person, and this is something that I've had a lot of trouble grappling with, is that, okay, well, what's the moral foundations of an agnostic or an atheist worldview? It's a journey I have not yet finished, but it's something that I think about deeply, and I've spent hours and hours talking to people about this stuff, and I don't know where I'll end up. I don't have a good answer for it, but I do think that the Christian worldview, if you do believe in God, which I can't profess one way or another, because once again, I'm agnostic, I do think that the religious worldview holds the most water and is probably the most valuable in that respect. And I think that's something that libertarianism doesn't offer, that, you know, a religious worldview does offer.
Yeah. Well, and definitely we'll have to do a part two conversation. We can explore that a little more deeply, but let's see what our good friend Clavin has to say here. Let him continue rambling.
You, I'm dealing with you. If you're a criminal, you're a criminal. If you're a good guy, you're a good guy. That's it. I care about the color of your hat, not the color of your skin. So Candace stood by her friend Kanye West when he started spouting crazy stuff about going DEFCON on the Jews. Fine. She has a mentally ill friend. She stood by him, you know, fine. You know, a little uncomfortable, but still, you know, so what? You know, she attacked this guy, Rabbi.
Because I want to pause it right there. If I had more time, I would like play this back to back with clips from Candace's most recent show. But I would just encourage people, if they remember that saga and have any questions about it, Candace did a really good breakdown of this on like her last episode on the Daily Wire, where she explains where she's like, listen, I'm not saying Kanye handled this the right way, but here's the context of what he was reacting towards. And there was this Jewish person who was texting him, who was basically saying like, you and I are going to have a sit down and chat, and you're either going to come to, you know, see things my way, or I'm going to have you institutionalized and you're never going to see your kids again. And I was
how do you react to that? How are you supposed to react to somebody telling you, and even if they can't do that, like, what is the proper response to somebody telling you, you will never see your kids again? What is the problem? Because I mean, for most people, I hate to say this, but I think violence sometimes may be the proper response to somebody like that. If you're telling me that you are going to isolate me from my family, I mean, that is criminal. If you're telling somebody that and you have intent to do it, then once again, what's the proper response? I'm not saying you should go out and go murder people. I'd never advocate that. But at a certain point, I mean, you could understand somebody's frustration.
Yeah, exactly. I 100% agree with that. Doesn't mean that Kanye was right in everything he said. Does it mean that, you know, I'm not trying to endorse Kanye, and neither was Candace. Mm-hmm. But she was just like, her pitch was always, I think Kanye shapes culture, and shaping culture is important, and we should try to, you know, surround him with people with good ideas and get him on a good path rather than ostracizing him and wasting his potential, which, you know, like, I don't think she was wrong to try to pursue that or to try to contextualize the things that were causing him to react this way. And I think, you know, it's easy, like, forget just Kanye. There are some people who go too far down the what people call like the JQ rabbit hole.
Absolutely.
And you can, if you're willing to just be objective, you can understand how people fall down that rabbit hole, because there are, just as this guy who was texting Kanye, there are powerful people who will try to wield their power and influence in the interest of sort of this like Zionist Jewish, collective special interest, you know, hive that exists. And it's as I kind of described earlier, it's this weird amalgamation of different groups. And if you even like, as Candace has found out, if you sort of even just begin to poke that with a stick, they come after you, and they will come after you hard, and they will make threats of ruining your career, of separating you from your family, institutionalizing you. I mean, all sorts of stuff. And some people react to that, and they don't, as you and I have kind of explained, chalk that up to, well, this exists everywhere. There are, you know, within groups, good and bad people, and you know, kind of just taking that response. Some people kind of then go down the full, like, you know, oh wow, so, you know, Jews run the world, and, you know, all the anyone who's spent any time on the internet knows all the dark corners of the internet and all the Jewish conspiracy theories and things like that. It's like, I don't go there, but I understand how some people, when they see some of this stuff happening, and I think this is kind of what happened to Kanye. He felt, he didn't just see it. He experienced this, and then it pushed him into the hands of some other people who were going down those rabbit holes. And I think he kind of followed them there for a little bit. And Candace was just kind of like, you know, wasn't willing to, like, she didn't want to just like turn on her friend and just start attacking him like anyone else. And I like this gets to, I've had this conversation with so many people, mostly because of like dealing with critics of mine within the libertarian sphere, like the fakertarians and whatnot, where, you know, there, some people respond to people who become overt racists or overt, like, you know, alt-right types. And they're like, well, we need to just publicly shame them as Nazis and racists and like xenophobic or whatever. And like, you know, ostracize them from society. I'm like, I've always said that's the wrong way to handle that. Like, that just gets them only talking to other people who think like them. They go further down these conspiracy holes and, you know, end up possessed by these, you know, it's like, you know, they end up in like ideological capture, because they've been shunned by everyone else. Whereas like, I prefer like the Daryl Davis approach, which is like, no, just talk with these people and acknowledge where they're right. Show them where they have gone a little, you know, like, listen, you're responding to collectivism. And now you're responding to that collectivism with more collectivism. And that's not the solution in either case.
Right. Well, it's in people's nature to dig their heels in when they're attacked. Yes. So, you know, like you said, the Daryl Davis path, let's have a conversation and let's, you know, understand where they're coming from and try to build a dialogue and maybe see if I can pull them back from, you know, the edge of unreasonable insanity, or, you know, bring them back to sanity and kind of see things through a little bit more of a nuanced perspective. Because if you're only talking to people who think like you and you're in a very, very dark place of, you know, collective and, you know, this one particular group, and this doesn't have to be just about Jews, it could be anybody, you know, this particular group is responsible for all the world ill, or, you know, all the worldly ills and all the problems that I'm facing. Once again, you shouldn't want to push that person further into that corner. You should want to bring them out. You should want to be, you know, maybe a light at the end of the tunnel saying, like, I understand why you're frustrated, but let's kind of pull you back into the real world where we can get you living in a way that's a little bit more conducive to having like a good and healthy life where you can socialize and not think that everybody of a certain group or just everybody in general is out to get you. Like, that's like, yeah, schizophrenia and paranoia. That's not healthy.
And this doesn't just exist on the right. Like, I would say, right, what you see with Black Lives Matter, what you see with the most extreme anti-white hatred and rhetoric on the left.
Transformer stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah, is really just the same thing in reverse from the other side. But that's more socially acceptable for some reason. Like, I don't know why. It's just in our culture. It's like, oh, if you think whites run the world, and if you think whites are sort of the root of all evil and all problems, it's all just white Western colonialism. It's the boogeyman that answers everything. Every inequality, every injustice is caused by white Christians and white colonialism and white men. That's fine. Like, I'm not trying to say that the Jewish stuff or the, you know, the racist stuff on the right is right or correct. I just find it funny that stuff is considered evil, while the stuff on the left is just, even by like people in the middle or like on the center left or center right, will go, well, they're just wrong and misguided.
Right.
Like, well, wait, what? Why? Like, either they're both evil or they're both just wrong and misguided or some combination. Like, what's the special pleading here that says one is, you know, and so this is actually, I'll play more of Klavan here, because this is, Klavan's going to do the same thing. He's going to say that when it comes to the Jews, it is literally just a special kind of evil. So don't take my word for it. We'll hear it out of the horse's mouth.
By Shmuley, I will tell you, with all honesty, I don't even know who Rabbi Shmuley is. I have no idea. I didn't look him up. I haven't seen anything from him. You know, she's complaining about him. Fine. You don't like a rabbi? You're allowed not to like. You're allowed not to like Ben. You're allowed not to like anybody you don't like, if you can spell it out for me what the problem is. But when you start saying things like, some of those books Hitler burned weren't so bad. You know, I was shocked. This is something Candace actually said. I was surprised to learn that the books Hitler was burning, or the Nazis were burning, they weren't good books. They were bad books. They were socialist books. So,
Is that wrong? I mean, like, yeah, you can kind of just like say something and laugh it off, but like, I mean, listen, the Nazis made companies that exist today.
Right.
The Nazis had scientists that went on to continue scientific developments that we use today. Right. Like,
Yeah, it makes people uncomfortable to think that the people that you think are the most evil, vile people in the world may have some legitimate grievances. But see, this is the thing. This is how the worst ideologies and the worst movements kind of form, is that they need that grain of truth. This is how all the wars get started. There always has to be a grain of truth, because they can't sell it on 100% a lie. There has to be some, you know, at least deny, you know, plausible deniability or some kind of grain of truth in there to sell it, because otherwise people won't trust it at all. So this is what people do, is that they'll take that little grain of truth and they'll extrapolate it, you know, 50 points down the way, so that they could sell you on what their agenda is. And this is, once again, why you kind of have to give the devil its due in all regards, because you should understand why, you know, what you're opposed to, you know, whatever your goal is, you should understand why, you know, if you're competing with something, what their goal is, so that way you can properly fight it.
Yeah. And, you know, he's not going to bring this up here. There's another quote people have gone after Candace for. So that Rabbi Shmuley that he cited said that, Rabbi Barkley wrote an article where she said that Candace said Hitler was okay. When really what she said was, if Hitler was just, because she was being asked a question about nationalism and if she was pro or anti-nationalism. And she said, well, I think nationalism gets this bad connotation because of Hitler. And she's like, listen, like, you know, in terms of like, if I'm going to be a globalist or a nationalist, I'd rather be a nationalist. And if Hitler was just trying to be a nationalist and trying to make Germany great again and like build walls to protect themselves and focus on their infrastructure and making their people wealthier and happier, then no one would have had an issue with him. It's when he decided to expand and attack others and slaughter a bunch of innocent people is where, you know, that's the evil part. And so nationalism wasn't the evil part. It was the expansionist evil, you know, murdering machine. And we need to separate those two, which I think is 100% correct. Like, I guess nationalism can lead towards collectivism, which can cause you to other groups and justify killing them, but it's not like self-evident that nationalism 100% lends itself towards that, or at the very least that if you're doing a trade-off comparison of nationalism versus globalism, that, you know, someone can't come away going, yeah, nationalism's a better trend than globalism. Which, if maybe she's wrong, but like, okay, whatever. Does that mean she clearly didn't say Hitler was okay? And this is getting to the point we're talking about, which is like, we can look at people who are objectively like evil, who have done evil things, but then be like, okay, like that doesn't mean, like, you know, evil people can sometimes do things that are either correct or even might, you know, in isolation say like, well, that was a, you know, a good thing to do, or a reasonable thing to do. Or at least, like, you know, something like, again, like there are, insofar as Hitler criticized socialism, like just because Hitler said socialism is bad doesn't mean socialism is good, right? It's just that kind of like, you know, yeah, and maybe it makes people uncomfortable, but it's like, I don't know, like, I mean, if we're going to go that route, then no one should be vegan or vegetarian, because Hitler was, right? So it's like, you know, but like, how insane are we going to go? Like, you can really reduct you ad absurdum that to basically be like, so when Candace says, listen, like, people want to talk about how the Nazis were burning, because this was in response to conservatives trying to censor certain books in public schools and things like that. And say, like, you know, and people are like, oh, you're getting rid of books. You know who also got rid of books? The Nazis. And I think Candace was trying to say, you know what, like, if you're just getting rid of bad books, at least from like public areas, maybe especially around kids. And listen, like, maybe, you know, the books that the Nazis burned weren't like, they weren't burning every book alive. They were, some of the books they were burning were like objectively bad books, like maybe like, you know, books promoting socialism and what. And maybe you're even saying you shouldn't burn them or whatever. But like, for him to be taking this point and be like, oh, clearly that means she's dog whistle. I don't think I played that part yet. I think he's going to call it a dog whistle here in a second. Let me play it.
So, you know, that's true. Burning the book is the act of a savage, first of all. And when you start with burning books, you start burning people. But they burned Joseph Conrad, one of my favorite writers, Kafka, Hemingway, Jack London. And yes, some socialists, some of whom were extremely talented and some of whom were extremely interesting, like Karl Marx is an extremely interesting writer with whom I deeply, deeply disagree, but I don't burn his books because I'm not a savage. When you start saying that, you're saying that's a dog whistle. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So right there.
There it is.
Yep. So again, it's like, oh, if you're saying that, and what's so crazy to me is that he's suddenly making the left's argument.
Yes. And this is exactly, what the right has done over the last couple months. I mean, it's amazing to watch how literally they sound like Democrats talking about Black people when you talk about the Jewish people. And like, I'm not saying that there aren't legitimate grievances and there isn't legit anti-Semitism where people hate Jews and blame them for everything bad in the world. But when you start saying this is a dog whistle, like, you sound like MSNBC every single time they talked about Trump, and they left out the context of him when he talked about Charlottesville and said, there are good people on both sides, but I'm not referring to the white nationalists who should be condemned totally. That was like his exact quote. They're saying like, that's a dog whistle. Like you sound like a big woke, you know, liberal crybaby.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like maybe you could criticize Candace Owens as maybe like saying maybe the argument she's trying to make is wrong, whatever. But right. Then be like, oh, she's saying this because she's trying the dog whistle to Nazis and people who hate Jews. Mm-hmm. Just again, like the that is bending over backwards in the same way the left does to play these dumb identity politics games. And it just drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. Let's see what he says next. I don't quite remember.
I know it's a leftist phrase. I know they use it, you know, randomly with anything you say. I understand all of that. Still, the depredations of the Nazis.
No argument. Just like, I know left does this too, but like,
they're right. They're right. Yeah. You know what? No. He's pretty much saying, yeah, you know what? I know they say dog whistles, but we got to use it here because, you know, this time we're right. You know, the left, they're crazy. But, you know, we're the smart guys. And this is the problem when, you know, smarter people can be easier to trick because we'll buy our own bullshit all day.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he'll gladly convince himself that he's right. He won't possibly consider, you know, am I being irrational? No, I would never be irrational. Well, the fact is there's plenty of people, ourselves included, there's probably something that we're just 100% wrong on, and we've completely convinced ourselves that we're right about it.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Against the Jews are one of the most well-documented, recorded atrocities in human history. Because
Yes. Candace has never denied the Holocaust or tried to minimize the Holocaust, although it's worth noting that there is no official consensus on the exact numbers of the Holocaust, because you have legitimate scholarly estimates that go as low as 2 to 3 million Jews killed in the Holocaust, and then some that go as high as 10 million. And 6 million is a number people settle on because it's like part of some Jewish prophecy, I think, or something like that. So it's like, but the point is, you can't go and find, like, if these clips existed, they would be used, right? Like Barclay mm-hmm. and Rabbi Shmuley would be finding the clips where Candace goes, yeah, did the Holocaust really happen? I mean, could this many concentration camps kill this many people over this? Like, none of that. No, it's, well, I don't know, like, you know, Hitler was burning books of socialists because he hated socialists, and okay, so like, and that means that the Holocaust didn't happen. I'm not understanding, like, this is like that step one, step two blank, step three profit. Like, there's a big disconnect in the middle of this argument here. He just basically brought up something to make people feel morally, you know, icky. And then he'd be like, see, you feel icky. That's because Candace Owen really hates Jews and doesn't think the Holocaust happened.
Well, and this is what a lot of people will do, is that they'll do, you know, go fact, my opinion. And what their opinion's meant to do is make you feel a certain way or convince you of their argument. So, okay, Andrew Klavan, if Candace legitimately denied the Holocaust, show the proof that she did that, and then show your proof that, you know, however many Jewish people died in the Holocaust. I don't know. I haven't researched a topic. I believe that millions of people were killed in the Holocaust. I don't know how many, because that's outside of the scope of my work. But once again, if you were here to present that argument, then show where she did that. Prove that she said that and walk through why she's wrong. If you can't do that, then you're just trying to get people worked up. You're trying to make people emotional to support your argument, which is just complete and total bullcrap.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going here.
They're Germans. They're Germans. They keep records. They keep very good records. We know these things happen. They weren't burning books. You know, they also hated Einstein because his science was Jewish science. They hated Mendelssohn, one of their great composers, because his music was Jewish music. That's the way they thought. It's lunacy. It's lunacy to think that way. So when you start to say, well, you know, some of those books they burned are, you know, were bad books. I'm sorry. That's a dog whistle.
Again, not an argument. Just an assertion. It's just like icky, icky, icky. You know, they hated Jews. They hated Jews. So if you think that any of the books that they burned might have been bad books, and I think Candace's point was just that, like, I'd have to go back and find the original context she brought this up in. She was not saying we should burn. I think she was just kind of making a side point. She's like, they're comparing us to Nazis for removing books from people. And she's like, just by the way, like, the Nazis didn't just, like, burn every book in existence. Like, we hate books. Like, they were burning books that they considered bad. And some of these books were objectively bad. Just in the way, like, that shouldn't be, like, controversial, like, any more than saying, like, you know, the Nazis invented Volkswagen, and Volkswagens are cars that people still like to enjoy and drive today, even despite how you and I might hate working on them as auto mechanics.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so, Len, you know, my follow-up question to him saying this, though, how he said people who burn books are savages, would you say the same thing if you saw somebody outside burning a copy of Mein Kampf? Would you feel the exact same way? Probably not. And look, that's okay. If someone bought a book and they wanted to burn it, all right. Like, it's your property. You can do with it as you please. If you're dumb enough to buy a book and then burn it, that's on you, man. You're not a savage for that. And then once again, if she said that, like, these were bad books, why is she wrong? If they weren't bad books, okay, once again, make your argument. Why weren't they bad books? If she's just saying, you know, they burned bad books, you know, some of the stuff, the reason why Hitler was able to rise to power is because of some of the degeneracy and the rampant inflation back in the day. Now, obviously, his solutions were beyond the pale, but, like, somebody like that doesn't get into power just because, you know, one day for no reason, right? Like, there were things that led up to this that people felt disenfranchised and felt that they needed somebody to come back and take, you know, authority. Like I said, it wasn't just, you know, one day for no reason at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Who retweet a post saying a Jew is drunk on Christian blood, which goes back, as I'm sure you know, to old blood libel.
All right. Again, if I had more time, I'd go and like, I do want to show my work, but at the same time, Candace already showed her own work here, so I'll just, you know, cite people to go watch her last episode of The Daily Wire, where she tackles this head on, because this was in the context of, so again, like, this is not even something she said. This is a tweet she liked, and the point of the tweet was calling out how I think it was Rabbi Shmuley or Rabbi Barkley, I forget which one, made some kind of claim, and they got the date wrong, and like, it was obvious they got the date wrong, because like, the screenshot showed a day that hadn't actually happened yet. It was like, it said like the 20th, the 20, I think it's like, so I think it was like this, it was like March 13th when this was this post was made, and the date on like the screenshot showed March 20th. And so then when people looked and found it, it was from like last year or something. Mm-hmm. And so someone commented and was like, hey, this is, this is March 13th, and the thing says March 20th. What are you, drunk on Christian blood? Like, they were calling. So, like, it was an edgelord on Twitter calling out how he made a really egregious error in trying to make the claim he was making, and the dates proved it. And he threw in a, you know, like, I guess slightly anti-Semitic trope in there, which... And Candace said, like, well, I liked the comment because it was like the top comment that showed that like he got the dates wrong. She was like, I didn't read it explicitly, like looking. And this is true for a lot of people. Like, we're not on, you know, like Red Alert looking for racial slurs or dog whistles, like people use that term. We're not looking for those in the things that people say. Right. So Candace was like, I liked this. and only found out later, like, oh, it had this thing in there. And she was like, by that point, people were already dogpiling me. And I was like, I'm just going to leave it up. Like, I'm not going to take it down to bow to the mob, which is, right. You know, that's that. And listen, that's the right move. Like, I'm sorry, that's the objectively right move, because bowing to the woke mob, whether it's the right woke mob or the left woke mob, never satisfies the mob. So you just go like, okay, I didn't mean it that way. I'm not going to take it down. I'm not going to retract it. You can, you know, you can be upset if you want to be upset. But again, it's just grasping at straws. Like, they can't point to anything that Candace has actually said that is actually like, I hate Jews. I want Jews to be dead. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, these obscure things taken out of context. And then it's, again, just making people having that, like, moral uncomfortability. Like, oh, that's icky. And then, like, oh, yeah, that proves it. You know, and it's just, so, again, it's like, don't take my word for it. You know, if I had, like, an extra 30 minutes to spare, I'd, you know, have her video here and play it. But it's just better for you to go watch it yourself. And you'll see she's not shying away from any of this. And it doesn't matter how many times she repeats, because, like, you know, people should watch her interview with Rabbi Barkley, where she's like, I don't know how many times I have to say I condemn Hamas. And in that interview, Barkley was like, yeah, but you can't equivocate. If you can't say that October 7th was an especially egregious evil, just above the pale compared to anything else, and it doesn't matter how many Palestinians die on the other side, it would not be the same. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, what? Why? Like, seriously, why? Why is it when Jews die, that's a special evil above the pale that nothing can reach, but when Palestinians die, it's just like collateral damage.
Right. And then I guarantee you none of these pro-Israel people would bring up the fact that, hey, if you even look in Haaretz, they even say themselves in their own police reports, which Haaretz is a pro-Israeli newspaper, that there were IDF soldiers, IDF tanks, IDF planes that fired on civilians, Israeli civilians. Okay, so are they uniquely evil for killing Israeli civilians? If you say that, all right, then we can agree, and you have a reason, you know, you have an objective standard. But then, okay, well, is it also uniquely evil for the IDF to, you know, as of the date of recording this, March 24th, 2024, the death count in, you know, Gaza has to be almost 40,000 people, if not around 38,000. And if I remember correctly, a majority of those are women and children. So is that not uniquely evil too, to kill literally a percentage? I think the percentage of people who were killed in Gaza is something, you know, 1 or 2% of the population there. I mean, granted, that's not a huge number, but I mean, can we not say that's objectively wrong? Even if like half of that 30,000 was Hamas, is it still not objectively evil to kill 20,000 civilians if we're talking about just a hypothetical, even though the number is way higher than that of civilians that the IDF has killed? Or is it only okay to say that, oh, well, Hamas killed some innocent Israeli civilians? You know, right. We don't need two standards. One standard will do just fine.
But, and as you'll see, Klavan's going to go on after this to basically say that, no, we need two standards because the Jewish people are a special people, and that mm-hmm. when evil is committed against them, it is a special kind of evil, and it's just worse. Right. It's basically, and I'm like, and Candace is just taking a stance that you just said, that like, no, there's a consistent standard. And when Jewish people, innocent Jewish people are killed, that's evil. When innocent Palestinian people are killed, that's evil. And this is what they're going after her for. So I'm going to let Klavan finish out a little spiel here, and then we'll come to conclusions.
Sure.
That you know, Jews eat Christian children. You know, that's a dog whistle. When you start to refer in this kind of clever way to certain group of people in Hollywood corrupting blacks and killing Michael Jackson, you're not allowed to then put on an innocent look and say, well, I'm just saying there's certain people, just like a few, you know, it's not, I'm just saying, you know, you're messing with us. You're messing with us, and everyone knows it, and no one is fooled except those people who want to pretend to be fooled because they hate the Jews. The biggest truth that Candace told in that way, that I find, again, and this is not personal animus toward her, but I find difficult to excuse this when anybody does it. The truth that hid wickedness, that I thought was the most wicked truth to use, was the truth that Christ is king. It is almost exactly 20 years since I acknowledged the kingship of Christ in my life and over the universe as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna stop him there. So he'll go on to basically say, people can listen to the rest of this. He'll say, like, yeah, I became a Christian and Christ is king, but, you know, but I'm still Jewish and the Jewish people are still special. And that gets into a whole different thing about dispensationalism and eschatology, which I've covered on my show and people already know my opinions on. But, like, that notwithstanding, like, even if the Jews have a special place in God's future and God's covenant, they're still not especially, like, they don't have a special moral status where they are double protected for murder but then excused when they murder innocent people. Right. That just doesn't exist. Christ is king is being used in an anti-Semitic way. Like, no, like that's just an appeal to the fact that, like, we're not going to bow down to a mob, to a government, to an ideology that people like Candace and people like me are saying that Christ is king and our values come from him. And Christ is primarily spoken as someone who is to bring peace between the nations, not war. And so when people are trying to use Christ's name to justify these mass slaughters, that's wrong when Hitler does it. That's also wrong when Christian dispensationalists and Zionists do it to justify all the war crimes that Israel is committing against Gaza. So there's just nothing anti-Semitic about bringing up Christ as king in this context. You know, Candace is making arguments exactly in the same way I am, which is why I've grown to like her a lot. She's saying, listen, like I am a citizen of God's kingdom, and I submit only to God's will and God's moral decrees, and none of these other things that you try to put on me, none of your collectivisms, none of your identity politics, mm-hmm. none of those matter. I'm going to follow Christ. I'm going to do what's right in his eyes. So respond to that here, and then we're running a little over time, so we'll try to close this out.
No, I've enjoyed this a lot, but so my question then would be, if you hear it thrown around a lot that, you know, the Jewish people are God's chosen people. Okay, well then, if we're all made in God's image, then why would it be that, you know, Jewish people would have a special standard? You know, what separates them from the average person who, once again, as you've laid out, and you would be, you know, the person to answer this, if we're all made in God's image, then why is there a separate standard of morality for Jewish people versus, you know, white people, Palestinians, Muslims, whatever group? Why is it that this one group can have a higher moral standard in Andrew Klavan's eyes?
Yeah, and that would get, and so, you know, these might be questions that might be good to, you know, talk about. We have a second conversation where you're asking more about Christianity, because sure. It's a debate within Christianity, and I think that the dispensationalists like Andrew Klavan have just got the Bible message totally wrong. I've done some episodes on that, and it's like, if we had another 2 hours, I'd really, like, you know, put that. I mean, like, just the I'll end on this, and then we can do plugs and get out of here. Sure. The consistent message of the Bible is God's mission to rescue humanity because they are fallen, and he starts by choosing a special group of people and saying, you're my special chosen elect, and it is the Jewish people, and you're supposed to be a royal priesthood and a blessing to the nations, and you're going to, you know, be the vessel by which I bring my peace and my moral decree to the world and reconcile the world. And they fail to do it. And God even says multiple times in the old covenant in their prophets, like, you have failed to do what I asked you to do, and you've broken this covenant. But say, don't worry, I foresaw this. And going back to, like, Genesis 3, where he says that the offspring of Eve will crush the head of the serpent, he said, I will still use you, just not the way you expected, because it was from the nation of Israel that Christ was born. And then Christ succeeds where Israel fails, because Christ is the one who then crushes the head of the serpent, who brings peace to the nations. So this is all stuff that, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, and there's different views on eschatology, different views on covenants, but none of them will, as you pointed out, there's no consistent reading of scripture that comes away with saying murder bad except when Jews do it. Like, so Kyle, this has been great to cover all of this, and definitely have you on again sometime in the future. Go ahead and just remind people where they can find you and check out the different shows that you do.
Of course. So you can find me on Twitter at Matovic. My last name, because it's a little bit tricky, is spelled M-A-T-O-V-C-I-K. I run the In Liberty and Health podcast. I normally do that 2 to 3 times a week. I also do 5 till midnight on Mondays, and occasionally Cognitive Vigilance on Thursdays. And the band that I play in is called A Common Crown, and you can find us at commoncrown.com. It's a whole list of plugs, but you can find that all if you go to my Twitter. I have a link tree there, and you can follow me everywhere from my Twitter and my link tree.
All right. Well, thanks, Kyle, for coming on. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back again next week.